broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendry.
We know we have a fiscal crisis in this country. We know.
Well, there's some days I try to figure it out because I'm always.
CBS News Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center.
Ever smoke wolf?
No, not really.
Effing retarded.
World famous Phil Hendry show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The news talk and entertainment show. Ed knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch. And this is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. That's right. The right-wing radio show is on the air. CBS News reporter Laura Logan suffered what is being quoted as a brutal and sustained sexual assault and beating. And some leftist journalists were mocking her. Some guy named Neer Rosen. And they tell me he is a learned man, and he works for the New York Times and New York Magazine and does some other things. We're going to talk about that with Bobby Dooley at the top of the next hour from the Western Estates Parent-Teacher Organization on this journalist, Laura Logan, suffering, quote, brutal and sustained sexual assault, end of quote, at the hands of protesters in Cairo. Plus, the GOP is set for a fight with Obama over the budget. David Castorini is going to join us this hour for a discussion of that. 877-876-PHIL. Is the number 877-876-7445. Tonight, our affiliate spotlight is on KXFD 970 AM in Portland and a new affiliate in El Paso, KHRO 1150. Great to have you guys with us in El Paso. Great to be back on the air in El Paso. And as we move through the news tonight, there's going to be a lot of budget stuff. We're going to cover the budget stuff with David Castorini right now. And then the Laura Logan, that's sort of an international story. I just mentioned this guy, Neer Rosen. He's a journalist and a fellow at the New York Center, New York University Center for Law and Security is who he is. All right. So let me first bring on here David Castorini. He is a minister, does a series of television and radio broadcasts, a youth minister with David Castorini Ministries, who just returned from Washington, D.C., and a briefing by religious leaders around the country, a briefing from the White House and the Democratic Party on the budget. And that was a very, that must have been a very interesting time, David.
Well, it was unexpected, Phil. I don't think I've ever been invited to a political conversation or convention quite as far-reaching as this, and we are ministers. Our primary focus is the salvation of young people in my ministry, to be able to look at the nuts and bolts of government, of budget, where money is going. Very, very exciting.
All right. So what were you, and the one thing that you talked about before we went on the air, the high-speed rail plans of Vice President Joe Biden, you found some kind of a spiritual calling in a lot of this.
Well, I did, and I told several of the other pastors that were there, I said, I think if we look at this as an opportunity to embrace a spiritual journey. If we look at this as a way for us to embrace a spiritual path, I think we're looking at it the right way, and I think we can inspire and we can bring young people or whoever is the object of our ministry along that path with us. Vice President Biden announced this $53 billion program, and I'd heard of high-speed rail, but I had not heard about it or heard it spoken of in such an exciting way. It is a $53 billion program over the next 6 years that would make existing rail faster. It would make it a high-speed system that can get people from point A to point B in one quarter of the time. It was, in a word, Phil, it was exciting. I listened to the vice president speaking. He was talking about the future. And what is life but preparation for the future, I think. And what is life when we speak to young people and we talk about a religious ministry, we talk about a calling to God? That's all about the future, and that's about bringing the future to us. And when I heard Vice President Biden talking about the excitement of high-speed rail, of a high-speed conveyance into the future, where the future is brought to us much faster, it was exciting. I could almost, you know, I could almost feel the wind in my hair, if you want to put it that way. It was a way of seeing life not as a stale and daily process, but something that's very, 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 very changeable, very, very evolutionary and exciting.
And so it was Vice President Biden who was talking about the high-speed rail plan. Now, you know that there are a lot of people who are talking about the cost of this.
I do, yes.
What do you think of that?
Well, you know, I'm a minister, and I believe in God. I believe in the power of prayer. And I believe in the Bible and the Scripture, which says that you can move a mountain if you so wish a mountain to be moved. So I say, you know, and I say this with a... greatest of respect, but damn to hell, the budget. You know,
really?
Yeah, I say we talk so much about money, 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 that we forget the biblical scripture which says, "Consider the lilies of the field; they neither toil nor do they sweat, nor do they strain. Yet the Lord provideth for each of them." And do you not know that every hair on your head is numbered? And if we really believe that, why do we worry about money? Why do we worry so much about money? I know that things cost.
Well, I mean, you would you say that to a family trying to budget, you know, their year for education, for food?
No, you know what? I would, but I of course I'd take into consideration the struggles of the daily family. But what I would say to them is, I would say, you are worrying way too much about money. And you need to just trust that the money's going to be there. And if it isn't there, it isn't there. So much of us talking about money, we have to live within our means. We can't just treat money.
All right, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, we just lost a little bit of the connection. Just say that again.
I was going to say that we want to treat money simply as a vehicle for something, all right? We want to treat money as a vehicle for something. We don't want to treat money as a god. Money is not God.
All right, 877-876-PHIL is our number here. We're going to be back. We've got a technical difficulty with Pastor David Castrini in the Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry.
We had a little bit of a technical problem. Can you hear me now, David?
I hear you fine, Phil. I had a difficult time listening. There was some background noise.
All right. And I apologize, folks, but we're back here with David Castrini, Reverend Castrini, and we're talking about U.S. plans to inject $53 billion into passenger rail. Now, I don't think I've ever talked to a Christian minister about a technical bill like this, about a piece of legislation like this, ever in my career, although I know that the religious community of this country has gotten involved in, you know, governance.
Well, there's always been, I think, people who have essentially said, you know, that the religious right,
yeah,
had been very close to President Reagan and people like that. I don't consider myself to be a left winger. I consider myself to be right down the middle. But when I was listening to Joe Biden, and he talked about, the thing that made me excited was that high-speed rail is a way of racing to the future and embracing the future, racing to the future and enjoying the future, being a part of the future. I thought that I could bring this back to our Christian ministries, to our youth ministries, and tell them that, in a way, I understand what a lot of you young people are talking about with Obama, you know.
Now, you're going to come back and start talking up Obama to the kids?
No, I'm not necessarily, but a lot of them are big Obama fans. And for me to say to them, well, I get it, because this was exciting. And high-speed rail, I don't think any president in the history of this country has proposed anything quite so exciting as high-speed rail. I don't think I've ever seen any president propose anything quite as open as high-speed rail. And so Vice President Biden... was that individual to open my eyes to that.
All right, now he estimated, now we wanted to get back to price, right?
You were talking about cost.
Yeah, we want to get back to cost, and our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. And not only cost, but you bringing the Christian message into a discussion here of high-speed rail. First of all, the cost. You were saying we're thinking too much about money.
We do think too much about money, Phil. I think if we're going to be Christians and we're going to be people who trust in God, we have to stop obsessing over money. We've got to stop worrying about how much this costs, how much that costs. We have to stop making fools out of ourselves because on the one hand, we say money isn't everything, and rich people don't really get the joy of just being a poor and simple man. By the same token, we envy the rich.
But how, again, are you going to tell a family that is struggling to make a educational commitment?
Well, there you go again with that word struggling. You know, every time you say that, we give the poor an excuse to continue to struggle. When you say, well, how are you going to explain to a family that struggles, I'd like you to put that a different way, if you could, Phil. This is part of the workshops we do on Saturday. If you could put that a different way.
What do you want me to put a different way?
Well, instead of saying that, I'll give an example. Instead of saying that a family, what do you say to a family that struggles? What if you were to say, what do you say to a family that may need to work a little harder? Or what do you say to a family that worries too much about money and they don't have any?
All right, what do you say to a family that worries too much about money and they don't have any, you know?
All right, now we're talking about a family that the reason why they're poor is they worry too much about money. I have, in my ministry last year, I'm going to be very honest with you, I paid myself a salary of $350,000 based upon the monies that we've been able to raise. And yet, I don't notice that salary at all. And here's what I mean by that, Phil.
Well, how does a guy not notice a $350,000 salary?
I don't notice it because I don't obsess over money. I drive a nice car. I wear nice clothes because I know I have to, so that I set an example for people in my church who are not who don't handle money as well, who are poor, and they use that excuse. You know, I'm struggling. I'm not about Reverend Ike. I'm not about money. But what I am about is the future. And when I heard about a high-speed rail that could take us into the future at a breakneck clip, as fast as you please, going at speeds in excess of 200 miles an hour, I was excited about that. What's not to be excited about?
Well, there's a lot that you're saying there. Our number 877-876-PHIL here with Pastor Castorini, who is came back from Washington, heard the presentation on the $53 billion high-speed rail, and you believe that it's exciting and we should move toward it. You believe it's almost like a Christian mission not to worry so much about the money. That's fine. You got a lot of people out there worrying about the money.
But let's forget about the money. Let's talk about the high-speed rail and the exciting possibilities for it.
Well, I don't know what those are, you know.
Well, I'm telling you what they are. It is the absolute dream. It is the symbol of this rush to the future, this beautiful rush to the future, this beautiful breakneck rush to the future, this ability for us to enjoy the future by way of high-speed rail. President Obama is giving that to us, a gift.
Well, President Obama's not giving us this gift, though. It's costing $53 billion, you know.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is when we obsess over the price tag, which is what you just did, you miss the message. You're saying it's going to cost $53 billion. I'm saying why do we worry so much about the money when we are a Christian people and we believe that God provideth for all the lilies of the field? Now, Obama has opened our eyes to a future that we have never even considered. Healthcare for everyone. High-speed rail that will take us to places we could only imagine, that we could only dream about. Now, Obama's done this, and I think it's time for people like myself to bring that message, and also the message, you know what, we don't need to worry that much about money.
Well, you know what? Good luck on that, because I'll tell you, when you say you don't have to worry that much about money, when you say that there is too much of an obsession over money, you're going against human nature, all right?
Well, am I going against the Christian nature is the question.
Well, there are people who would say that Jesus' teachings go against human nature.
Well, Christians don't believe that. I don't believe that.
Well, you don't believe that Jesus' teachings go against human nature. You just said you made $350,000 last year.
I made a lot of money, and yet I don't obsess over it. And that's why I've got a lot of money, because money is not what it's about for me. I paid myself a salary of $350,000 because my accountants advised that I had to. But I also paid myself that salary, Phil, I wanted to see what it is like to make that kind of money and not care. And you know what that's like for me? It's the same as when I was a little boy, and I was in Conyers, Georgia, and I would take my fishing pole to a creek that my father had shown me before he died, and he died when I was 11 years old, and I would take that pole to the creek, and I'd put it in. I'd spend all afternoon. I don't think I ever caught a fish, but in my mind, I was fishing with my father, and I spoke to him, and that's how I feel every day when I get out of bed in a $2.5 million home with a wife who last year was a model and today is devoted to the Christian ministry. She was a model.
Your wife, Jenny.
My wife, Jenny. And she gave it up and she's devoted to the Christian ministry now, 100%. I drive a Mercedes-Benz, but I don't care. I don't care about any of that. Money is not what it's about. It's a high-speed rail that Obama's going to give us.
877-876-PHIL. Talking to David Castorini. Always good to talk to you, Reverend. As you're talking about Christian belief, money, and Obama's high-speed rail. We can afford it. We just got to quit obsessing over the money, and it's an exciting project. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Mike in Brooklyn, New York. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the Phil Henry Show with David Castorini.
How are you? Respect to the minister. My question is...
Yes, thank you very much. Good evening to you.
Thank you. I don't think that there is so much of a concern about money. Just money is a necessity. And if it wasn't such a concern for you, I couldn't understand why you would take a salary of $320,000. Why wouldn't you choose a salary of $50,000? Why wouldn't you choose a salary of $120,000 if it wasn't such a concern?
Well, because my accountants said that I need to take a certain amount of salary. The rest can go into retirement. And the rest we turn back into our business, into the ministry, into our youth ministries, into the schools that we're building. He requires that. My accountant has required that.
Your accountant requires a certain number of...
Yes, sir, for tax purposes.
Well, I can understand that.
$350,000.
I can understand that. And just like other working people such as myself, I have a concern about it because it's a necessity for me. I have to continue working past my 20-year contract, just so I can sustain life after I retire.
But, you know, if we worry so much about money, we're never going to get high-speed rail, see? And high-speed rail is going to put you, Mike, in the seat of a train doing 200 miles an hour to wherever you want to go. But if we keep worrying about money, we're going to keep on hitchhiking, you see? And right now, America's hitchhiking. We're hitchhiking with health care. We're hitchhiking with high-speed rail. We're hitchhiking with the health of our children. We're hitchhiking with the infrastructure. We're out on the road like hobos. We got to get on a fast track, on a fast train. And, Mike, you're right up front, first-class seat, watching the countryside going by at a clip we could never have imagined.
You know, Pastor, I've always known you, Reverend, to be a good... You give a good homily, a good, as we say in the Catholic faith, a good homily. But, you know, what is this supposed to mean to folks?
What do you mean?
So we're on a high-speed rail, man. We still need $53 billion to pay for it.
See, what am I going to do? You just keep on getting anchored to money. You got to stop that. I think, Mike, you understand what I'm saying, don't you?
Well, I would rather see money go into education. I would rather see money go into health care, child care, opposed to a high-speed rail.
Sure. Of course. But that high-speed rail, Mike, where you and Phil can sit there and see that world, you guys are racing to the future. Right now, you and Phil are sitting like a couple of hobos.
We're not a couple of hobos. We're a couple of working guys. We're trying to make a living here. You're making $350,000 a year, Pastor, and that's great. You get out of bed and get into your Mercedes, and you say it's because you don't think about it. It's like you're fishing. The reality of life for me and for, I imagine, Mike and a lot of people is we get out of bed and we hump it, you know?
You guys are always going to be. See, he uses the hump it. That's a sexual term. Phil is rooted. Phil, you are really rooted in the flesh. Hump it. Like you're doing what? You're humping. You're rooted in the flesh.
All right. Mike, thanks so much for your call. Our number is 877-876-7445. 877-876-Phil. David Castorini, we'll be right back.
Phil Hendry.
You got to get off that kick.
Listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back to our show. It's 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, radio for patriots by patriots. And on the line with me is Reverend David Castorini from his youth ministries in Washington this week to talk to the vice president was Reverend Castorini, along with other members of the religious ministry world.
The world is of... We are, Phil, the world of the clerics. We are people involved in the religious ministry of a variety of religions. And
I'm always interested. When you say variety of religions, were there Jewish rabbis there?
You know something? I don't know, but I understand that a very good friend of mine, at least two of my friends, actually, Rabbi Thorkin and Rabbi Elmer were there.
Rabbi Elmer.
That's right.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL. Obama and his high-speed rail plan is something we need to embrace as Christians, says David Castorini. We worry too much about money, and we don't get anything done. And I think in principle and in theory, that's a wonderful thing to say.
You know, Phil, I hear people say an awful lot, in principle and theory, in principle and theory. In principle and in theory, Christianity should work. Well, in principle and in action, Phil, Christianity works. Quit worrying so much about money. Quit giving yourself an excuse to be a loser. God didn't want losers. God wants winners. And the high-speed rail that Barack Obama and Joe Biden were talking about, the Chinese are going to have high-speed rail. The Japanese have got high-speed rail. The Chinese have taken leaps and bounds past us with their technology, even to the point of their defense industries. And their defense capability, which I think scares a lot of people, the idea of using robotics in warfare, the idea of an army of robots, the idea of the Japanese using an army of some form of android. In the United States, what are we doing? We're still fooling around with human beings and choo-choo trains. And this is a country I love, Phil, and to think of America as a country that's choo-choo, if you saw the Good and Plenty commercials. Choo-choo, you know, on a choo-choo train, right?
And well, choo-choo train, like a steam engine.
Like a steam engine.
We don't have steam engine trains. We have diesel engine trains.
But in comparison to high speed, it might as well be choo-choo.
877-876-7445. Well, in comparison to high-speed rail, I guess a lot of things are slow, but are they necessary? And again, do we have the money? Is it Teak in Greensboro, North Carolina?
Yes.
Yes, sir, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I can't believe you're serious about this. You're talking, saying that people obsess over money and that you don't obsess over it. You don't obsess over it because you have it. You make much more money than many people in America do. And
I never obsessed over it, Teak. I never obsessed over it. I never worried about it. All I wanted to do was spread the word of Jesus Christ. And the money came to me. I didn't say, God, please make me a millionaire. But one day I woke up, and I've got a woman next to me who was a Miami Dolphin cheerleader and a model. And I got a Mercedes-Benz in the garage. I don't care. I could lose it all tomorrow. But this high-speed rail taught me.
Honestly, I kind of hope you do lose it all tomorrow, just so you understand where the rest of us in this country are coming from. We are not all millionaires. we're not all living in $2.5 million homes, and we don't have the money to keep giving to the government to waste on projects like this high-speed rail system.
No, if you're
no one's going to use this. All these studies have said that there's no reason to have this. I'm sorry?
But don't you believe that Jesus said that the lilies of the field and the way they, you know what I mean? The lilies of the field, right? You know what I'm saying, right?
No, so, I don't know what you're saying, to be honest with you.
If we build a
high speed, I don't know where you're coming from on this.
Are you kidding? If you worry about money too much, Pete, don't worry so much about money. We're going to have a high-speed rail that takes us straight past the Japanese and the Chinese on into the future.
But what good is it going to do if no one uses this system?
That's exactly what they said about the Metro Rail in Los Angeles. Guess what? Everybody's on that now. Everyone. What are you laughing at? That's exactly what they said. Nobody'd use it in L.A. because there's too many cars. Guess what? People use it every day, all the time. And they use it
in L.A.
to the point.
It's so bad you can't drive your car.
Well, you don't know anything about it. You're in wherever you are. But the fact of the matter is, it's true. So people will use it. But you got to quit worrying about money, and you'll get money. You got to quit worrying about being in Greensboro. Don't imagine you're in Greensboro like where you are. Think of yourself as being in, like, Paris.
Yeah, okay. Whatever that means.
Well, you're not playing with a full deck.
All right. Thank you very much, Teak, for your call. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. And we're talking now to Theo in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, guys. Hey, listen, I just got a question towards the Reverend there, David.
How are you doing?
If you're saying to me that, you know, you're not worried, first of all, you shouldn't concern yourself, and you can get rid of the word worry.
I don't worry. I don't worry at all.
You shouldn't even use the word worry. That's Satan right there.
I'm not even concerned. I'm not concerned.
That's the word.
I'm not concerned about nothing.
$350,000
a year. Yeah.
Okay, that's great. $350,000 a year. But
right.
I don't understand. We're in the process of trying to bring the country up to speed with renewable energies and do away with some of the things that's hurting us
Exactly. Exactly. That's what high-speed rail's going to do. It's electricity.
It's okay to bring in high-speed rails. That's not a problem, but that's not the top agenda right now in this country. We have a bunch of people in this country right now suffering deeply.
We need the vision. We need the... You're in Michigan? But
Michigan,
I just want you to know, high-speed rail takes you into the future past the Japanese and the Chinese and that robot army they've got, you know.
Let Theo finish. Go ahead.
That's okay and dandy. I have no problem with bringing a high-speed railroad in this country. No problem.
Right.
But it's not a top priority. Our priority is getting the people back to work in our country. Now, I'm in Michigan, and Michigan has been jammed so hard that it's tough in a lot of different areas. So I have to retrain myself. And I'm retraining myself in the renewable energy areas to make a better thing for myself. Now, we got to help other people, but for you to say that you went to bed and woke up one morning and that you had a beautiful cheerleader laying next to you and then you had a Mercedes-Benz and $350,000 in your account, you should have been married. I hope you was married before you did this. But in the meantime, if money is not a big issue to you, if money is not a big issue to you, listen to me. I've been walking since 1998. Do me a favor. Help your fellow brother out, right? Like Jesus would want everybody to help their neighbor out. Help me get a car so I can go out and find a better job. And on top of that...
I'm trying to help you. You don't understand. I'm getting you a job in renewable energy. You want a job in renewable energy, right? And the job in renewable energy that I got for you is building a high-speed rail. That's the job.
That's the thing. I'm not coming down on that. All I'm saying is this.
You want to get a car. That ain't renewable energy. That's gasoline. I'm going to get you on that high-speed rail.
I'll take a $500 car and make something happen. As long as I can get that.
You can get yourself a... Yeah, but that thing's on a fossil fuel. You don't want that. I'm just trying to tell you, that if you will quit worrying about money and
start
worrying about yourself sitting there in a bullet train, and you are you're sliding through the Japanese countryside.
I'm not going to slide.
Sliding through the Japanese country.
That's what I want you to do. And don't worry about you. Renewable energy, that a high-speed rail, you know what it runs on? It runs on nuclear electrical. They haven't even invented it yet, what it runs on. That's how amazing it is. They don't know what they're going to power it with.
What did I just do?
You listen.
Yes, they do. It's an electrical rail system. Thank you very much, Theo. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Now, listen, David, before we get to another phone call here, the U.S. is planning to inject $53 billion. You keep talking about the vision. You keep talking about the bigness of it. You want us to get past talking about money, but you're not really hearing. A lot of folks are saying, you know, this is the day-to-day. You know,
I understand the day-to-day, Phil. I live the day-to-day. Every day I live the day-to-day. You know,
well, you're living it every day with $350,000 a year.
That money that I make every year, that salary that I take for myself, it might as well not be there. Because when I get out of bed, I don't see the house around me. I don't see the furnishings. Or this gentleman referred to Jenny, who's my wife. Yeah, she was a cheerleader for the Miami Dolphins and was a model on Ocean Avenue in South Beach, Miami, but she gave all that up to become a Christian minister's wife. Can you imagine that? She gave all that up to be the wife of a minister.
The wife of a minister who's driving a Mercedes.
No, we don't. You don't understand. Keep wanting to go there, don't you? You keep wanting to do that. I don't see that. When I get out of bed in the morning, all I see is a world full of losers, people that don't get it, and I've got to get out. And
when you got out of bed in the morning, all you see is a world full of losers, but you're getting out of bed in your $2 million house.
No, I'm getting out of bed in a world of want and a world of need, a world of losers who worried about $53 billion for a high-speed rail that is going to shoot us, rocket us, into the stars past any android robot force that could be turned against us by the Chinese, any robot army turned against us by the Japanese, any fast high-speed rail that could be created by the Scandinavians or the Russians, we would be out in front. We'd be in the lead. We'd be in the future. But right now, we're sitting on a choo-choo train is what I was trying to say.
Well, we're sitting on a train of our own making, the American train, and so far it's leading the world in terms of the economy. Here is Shane in Tupelo, Mississippi. Go ahead, Shane.
Well, that's right. I agree with you.
Yeah, I want to ask the pastor if he'll buy me a ticket on this plane on this train, and
yes,
maybe
I will.
Look out the window and see the.
Yes, I will.
See some starving kids or something. You know that he could give some of that $350,000.
Well, I didn't say that train's going to build itself, did I? I said that it's going to be a high-speed rail. It's got to be built by people. Those are jobs. Those are real jobs.
You're pretty good in the Bible. Have you ever read in the Bible where Jesus told the rich man that he needed to give everything that he had away and follow him?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Well,
$350,000.
I don't think a Christian would talk about how much he had and how beautiful his wife was and all that. That's just not a Christian attitude, man.
And a Christian wouldn't worry about money the way you worry about money.
Yeah, Jesus wasn't worried about money because he didn't have anything. He was born.
You're worried about money.
He was born.
You're worried about money.
No, I'm not.
You're worried
about
money. Yes, you were. Because I keep talking about a high speed rail and you don't want to pay for it. Why are you worried about money?
Do you think a high-speed rail is going to come down in the woods in Mississippi and pick me up?
Yes.
The only high-speed rail I want to get on is the one that takes me to heaven to see Jesus face to face. That's the only high-speed rail.
Well, there won't be one.
I want to be on.
There won't be any high-speed rail going to heaven if you're down here worrying about money. And if you want a high-speed rail coming through the Mississippi woods to pick you up, we can do that.
Yeah,
for you.
Whenever this country goes bankrupt and we're taken over by some other country and, you know, we're slaves to some other country or killed.
Yeah, we will be. We will be slaves to the Chinese and their robot army because we didn't build a high-speed rail. Shane didn't want us to build a high-speed rail.
That fast train is just going to save us all. Obama's going to save
us
all.
Hey, Shane, I'll tell you what. You can have this train come through the woods and pick you up, or you can move
that's
to St. Louis or someplace
you know
where it's going to be going through.
The problem is,
what do you mean he can move to St. Louis?
I don't think we're going to put a high-speed rail in Tupelo, but we can
put it
in an area where
people like you and Obama and everybody in Washington has got so much money, and they don't talk about the little man like me that has to get out like everybody else and work his tail off to make a living.
Well, you know what, Shane? You're right, but he's been talking about you in a different way. You've been talking about people who need money, Pastor, as if they're, well, they're losers.
I didn't know. I didn't know what I said.
Well, what did you say when you said the guy doesn't have a lot of money because he worries too much?
Any man that doesn't have enough money worries too much about money, like Shane here. Every day he's worried. I'm saying forget it. Put that high-speed rail through Tupelo. You get on it. You can leave your old lady behind. You can leave your kids behind. Did he hang up?
Yes, he did.
Boy, that dirt.
Well, what does that mean?
Well, I was talking to the man, and he hung the phone up on me. I don't think that... Boy, there's a lot of unchristian behavior.
877-876-PHIL. You know, it's not the most Christian thing in the world to say to a guy, you know, if you're worried about money, man, you're thinking like a loser. 877-876-PHIL, as Pastor David Castorini tells us, a high-speed rail, $53 billion. Forget about the money. Let's build a high-speed rail. It's a trip to the future. And Jesus, as Christians, Jesus would want us not to worry about money. That's great. We'll be back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil with me is David Castorini as we talk in the final minutes here about a visit to Washington where he saw the plans for a high-speed rail unveiled before ministers and members of the religious calling there by Joe Biden. And David, back on here with us, you've made these statements that don't seem to be incongruous to you, do they?
I can understand, Phil, why people would say that I am a man who makes a lot of money. I do make a lot of money. What people are not understanding is it doesn't make any difference to me how much money I make. I have to make that money. My accountant told me that I had to make that money. Anybody that worries more about the money that I make and not the money they make, no wonder they're poor. No wonder they're poor. They're not living a Christian life. Anyone that is worried about me as opposed to themselves is not living a Christian life. And if you start thinking about the high-speed rail and what it can do, where it can take us, the vistas that we can conquer with high-speed rail.
And you really like this high-speed rail as a metaphor as much as an actual means of transportation.
I really do. I really do, Phil. And that's a good way of putting it. I do. It's the most potent metaphor for America that I can think of. High-speed rail will take us way out.
Yeah, well, okay, there's a joke there, you know.
No, but you understand what I'm saying. You can make jokes, but you know what I mean.
Well, I don't know what you mean. High-speed rail will take us to, it could take us to the place that we don't want to be, which is bankrupt. I mean, we already are, but tip us over the edge. 877-876-PHIL. Here's Brian in Memphis. Go ahead, Brian, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, Phil. Yeah, just driving home and from work, and I really, this is better than the XM Comedy Channel. This David character you have on. He's a pastor.
Hey, praise God. Any way that I can get through to you, I'm happy to do.
He's in a $2.5 million house. I think he said he makes a salary of $350,000. Those numbers don't add up. If anybody in your congregation listens to this,
why don't they add up?
What do you mean?
I don't even know what your what are your qualifications? Are you an accountant?
My accountant told me. And that's, there's more than one part to it. The second part is.
What do you mean your wife is?
Your
how much money do you get? Well, how much money do you
got? I've got enough to live on. I've got enough to put in the donation plate. I mean, are you stealing from the plate? I want to know. Are you stealing from the plate?
That's what that's a little man. You're a little man. You're a little man to make an accusation like that.
Because you can't
take the fact that I make the kind of money, and I just happen to have a different opinion than you, and then you accuse me of being of stealing because I got a different opinion than you.
Sure, just listen. Just listen. How does a $350,000 salary put you in a $2.5 million home? Answer that.
Are you kidding?
I mean,
are you kidding?
Something else coming out of the offering plate?
Well, Brian, let me ask you something. Is your wife the only one you're tapping? Is your wife the only one you're tapping? You got something at work? You got something on the side?
That's nice. You're a pastor.
Oh, really? And what are you accusing me of?
Are you a youth
What are you
pastor?
Accusing me of?
Are you a youth pastor?
Are you a faithful man? Are you heterosexual?
Are you a youth pastor?
Are you a heterosexual or are you tapping a young boy on the side?
That's the only congregation that you can preach to. It's going to buy what you're saying.
Is your boyfriend that you just left and you're going home to your wife.
Okay, that really shows me what you guys are all about.
He started it.
Thank you. 877-876. We'll be back. Phil Henry Show.
And
Bobby Dooley next.
From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
CBS 2 Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center.
How in heaven's name does the White House believe
what we see happening in Iran today is a testament?
Well, there's some days I try to figure it out because I'm always pleasantly surprised.
Almost as big as me.
Was an attractive cat.
World famous Phil Hendry Show, and this is Radio for Patriots by Patriots. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, a news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, where truth is our bitch, and where we take it through the looking glass and beyond to places other talk shows, well, they wish they could, but they can't. They wish they could, but they can't. And we have Bobby Dooley this hour talking with us about CBS News reporter Lara Logan. Lara Logan. She suffered a, quote, brutal and sustained sexual assault and beating. And she even got mocked for it by some guy named, I don't know what his name is, it doesn't make any difference. He's some jackball that has a, he's some ass who is a fellow at a fellowship of the rings or something. What's his name? Rosen. Some jackass that works for the New York Times, the New York Magazine, the New York this, the New York that, and thought it was funny to make fun of this woman. I mean, this is a man and a... typical of the sexism and the racism that comes from the liberal side. They're always very quick to point to the right as racist and sexist, but the number of racists and sexists on the liberal side of the scale is almost beyond the ability for a human being to count. It's a particular kind of almost gothically evil kind of sadistic racism and sexism because they purport to be such fair-minded people. It's almost like mentally diseased, mentally ill. All right, now coming on the line with me is Bobby Dooley from the Western Estates Parent-Teacher Organization. And Bobby and I have talked about this. And before we even begin, Bobby, you know that I'm not necessarily speaking about you here.
No, I know that, Phil, but I think you're being a little unfair to the man in question here, Mr. Rosen. Neil Rosen is an eminent man. He has a great many accomplishments as not only a fellow, but as a member of the teaching staff at NYU. And he is a man, I think, like a lot of us, Phil, who he's sort of at the end of his rope with some of these claims.
Well, do you think... Okay, so why don't we get to it? Do you think this woman, Lara Logan, is making it up?
I think that she is, like a lot of women, she's making unsubstantiated claims so that she can politically impugn a certain segment of political think. Look, I've been watching this revolution taking place in Egypt. This woman claims to have been sexually assaulted. This is as typical a claim as you're going to get in a situation like this from a reporter who is very much pro-right, pro-imperialist. She's obviously making things up to make the protesters look bad, and she's doing that to make these very peaceful people look bad so that people will not support the protests in Egypt, and so that President Obama and his administration does not support the protests in Egypt.
Why do you think she's making this up?
I think she's making it up because of a couple of things. First of all, she said she was sexually assaulted, which leads a person to believe that she was raped. But she doesn't say that. And the reason why she doesn't say that is she wants to leave herself an out in case she gets sued by one of the protesters or by the Egyptian, that part of the Egyptian political spectrum that was manning these protests. So she backs off and doesn't say she was raped because she wants to save herself a lawsuit.
And what lawsuit are you talking about?
A lawsuit for slander or libel.
So if she said she was raped, the people that attacked her would have a claim in an Egyptian court?
I would imagine they would, yes. And the point that I'm trying to make, I don't know, but yes, they would. I don't know how the laws work, but they would have a definite claim. If you said, I was raped, that could be brought into a court of law as a lawsuit. If you say I'm sexually assaulted, then you get people thinking that you were raped, when in point of fact you weren't. Now, on to whether or not she was sexually assaulted. There are some women who believe that if a man puts his hand on your bottom, that's a sexual assault. It could be a man putting his hand there to move you along. It could be a man putting his hand there by mistake. It could be the fact that a man put his hand there because he misunderstood you, that perhaps he thought that you were being affectionate. It could be a lot of things, Phil. It doesn't necessarily mean sexual assault. But in her mind, it's an opportunity to impugn the protests and to say that a man who put his hand gently on her body was a violent, vicious, vicious sexual molester. Number two, when you've had breast enhancement surgery, are you saying to men, please don't look at my breasts? I think you are. And so if you have had breast enhancement surgery, and men do look at your breasts, and in Egypt, Phil, they are not quite, and I say this with a great deal of respect because I love the Egyptian people. I love Egyptian culture. I am not anti-culture. I believe in multiculturalism. There's much that we have to learn from the Egyptians, and there is much that we could share with them. One of the things we could share with Egyptian men is that you don't touch women on their breasts. It's offensive. If a woman has had augmentation and she has large breasts, in some cultures, some of them that are very primitive, the men will grab and reach. And Steve, you were talking to Bill Culler, right?
Yeah, I was talking to Bill Culler. So a lot of men will just reach and grab and go, oh, look at that.
Well, you're saying that these men are so primitive in Egypt, they don't quite get...
They don't understand Western ways. But that is not to say that Egyptian men are animals or rapists. I don't think it happened. I think what happened was Laura Logan said this happened because she saw an opportunity to make herself look like a victim, to impugn the very peaceful efforts of the Egypt people, and to impugn the very good efforts, I think, of President Obama in putting the American people's support behind what's happening there.
So you're basically saying that she's a pro-Mubarak, right-of-center reporter. I understand she reported in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Yes, she did. And that, again, she took a very pro-American stance in her reporting.
And it's very interesting. I always wonder, what does a pro-American stance mean?
She was talking about how brave they are. I don't think I need to explain that, do I?
Yeah, you do. You do need to explain that.
She was talking about the American invasion as something that was good and that was justified. And
she was, huh? All right. And that's what you call a bias. All right, we're talking here with Bobby Dooley.
Very much so, yes.
All right, we're talking with Bobby Dooley here. Her husband Steve is along the way, too. Our number is 877-876-7445, 877-876-Phil. And we're discussing a very stunning and at first glance, horrible story of reporter Laura Logan, a CBS News reporter, who was covering the celebration in Tahrir Square of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak's resignation when she and her colleagues, including a security force, were surrounded by 200 people, according to a CBS statement. Logan was separated from a group and suffered what CBS said was, quote, a brutal and sustained sexual assault and beating. She was rescued by a group of women and 20 Egyptian soldiers, according to CBS. Do you have any comment on that?
Well, I don't know where they get rescued by a group of Egyptian women. It seems very romantic. It seems I think the entire story, Phil, quite frankly, is a fabrication. And I want to say this so that your listeners understand. Your listeners are just getting the story. Most of them are getting the story for the first time tonight. This is a story that was on the wire today, and a lot of people were certainly talking about it, but most people are unaware of this story, and so I want to say to everyone listening tonight and other shows that I've been on, understand that you're going to be assaulted over the next 24 hours with Laura Logan was sexually, quote, assaulted, end quote. I would like you to hear, instead of assaulted, the word sexually admired.
You don't even know that. You don't even know. What do you mean sexually admired? If the woman was grabbed, wouldn't you at least say, never mind?
No, I'm saying in Egyptian culture, that could very much be what that is. That's what I'm trying to say.
You don't know that. And, she went to the hospital. She didn't go to a hospital in Egypt. She went to a hospital here in the United States. So obviously she had some injury. And for you to say sexually admired...
I don't know the intention of the people, and I certainly don't know whether what she's saying is true or not. And I refuse to believe that in the middle of this beautiful revolution in Egypt, a beautiful uprising by the people, that the right wing in this country has decided they need to wipe... And you know, in the old days, Phil, in prison... protests. They did this in the Irish prisons. They've done this in American prisons. The prisoners wipe feces on the wall of their cell as a form of protest. This, to me, is what the right wing is doing to the Egyptian protest. Laura Logan is feces that they're wiping all over it.
And boy, is that ever dramatic.
No, it's not dramatic.
Yeah, that is not only dramatic, it's quasi-insulting.
No, it isn't, and I'll tell you why, Phil. This is a beautiful revolution that the right wing in this country and in Europe is trying to turn into a sexual assault, into some kind of sex-crazed, bestial bacchanal of animals pawing at the innocent young American reporter. I cannot let that happen. I will not let that happen.
Bobby Dooley from the Western States Parent Teacher Organization. What do you think? Laura Logan sexually assaulted during a Cairo celebration. That's what the news story says. And Ms. Dooley is saying she's making it up. She's looking for attention. She's basically accusing the woman of the very things that a lot of people accuse women of when they claim that they've been raped. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. We'll be right back.
said the amount. We're back with Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley here on, I don't know what her name is, Lara Logan. And is that how it's pronounced?
Phil, she's got a very difficult pronunciation. The name is Laura.
No, but she pronounces it differently, doesn't she?
She does, but I think that's part of the affectation. The name is Laura, Laura Logan, and she is a very attractive woman, and I am wondering to myself, what is she doing in Egypt? Why is she parading herself in a country that is struggling to lift itself up from centuries of a kind of culture that we wouldn't recognize here? Obviously, it is a unrestrained culture of men who have done what they wanted to with women, and women allowed it. Now Laura Logan goes to Egypt and parades this Western-toned, gym-toned body in front of these Egyptians, and then cries about being sexually, and we'll put this in quotations, assaulted. I think the time has come, Phil, and myself and other housewives here at Western Estates and elsewhere, we want to see America reach out to these indigent revolutionary movements and do what we can to help the people of those countries and not mock them by sending blonde reporters with 40-inch chests. And
well, the U.S., look, the U.S. government's not doing that. It's the United States media that's doing that. I don't know about a 40-inch chest. I'm looking at a picture here of Ms. Logan. She looks like she's a pretty normally endowed woman.
Well, I don't know what that means to you, but
what it means to me, what it probably means to a lot of people. She looks like a normal woman. She's an attractive woman. What are you saying? You're saying that the United States needs to keep women like that out of these areas because of what?
Because of the fact that we need to embrace and support these revolutions, not mock them. When you send a woman like this, who obviously is a fashion plate, I don't know what her, I don't know why she's in TV news, whether it's one of these moves that woman on Fox and Friends, whatever her name is, made, a former model or a former Miss America, or what it is, but it mocks the Egyptian people and what they're trying to do, and that was to get Mubarak out of there and to get a democratic country up and running. And when we send over one of our American models to walk up and down with a microphone and say, look at me, because it's really all about me, you're asking for one of these Egyptians to break free from the restraints, from the police, to break free and race across the street and grab her. And so,
all right, so we shouldn't cover these revolutions with attractive women.
No, I'm not. Don't be that stupid.
I'm not being stupid. You know, our job is not to, America's job, Ms. Dooley, is not to endorse or embrace revolutions.
Well, it should be. If America is about democracy, it should be.
Well, it shouldn't be. At least that's not the job of the media. The media is supposed to send over whatever reporters they have, and the media has reasons for hiring the reporters that they hire, and in this case, they hire this lady, Ms. Logan, and they sent her over there, and she was attacked. Now, you say she wasn't attacked. And you have no reason for saying that other than what you think.
I'm looking at this woman, and I'm hearing these claims of sexual assault. They don't add up. They just don't add up.
Why don't they add up? Why couldn't a mob of 200 men start grabbing her?
Because it doesn't add up for a couple of reasons. So I'm not saying they didn't grab her. I'm sure they did. But she's calling it sexual assault. I'm calling it the very first glimmer, if you will, of freedom on the part of Egyptian men.
And well, you know what? One of the things maybe we ought to teach these Egyptian men is how to keep their hands to themselves, you know? One of the things we ought to teach these Egyptian men is how to not grab a woman or fondle a woman or whatever else.
Well, this thing, she's going to the hospital, sounds very suspect.
You know what surprises me? You're a female, and I would think that you would be in her corner.
No. Phil, please don't think that all women, just like all black people, are a monolith. We are all very different. No. And I'm not going to back up a woman who is lying to make Egyptian men look like animals so she can get her picture in all the newspapers.
She's lying about the sexual assault. She's lying about what did she go to the hospital for?
She went to the hospital, obviously, I think, to make it look good. The American people eat this stuff up, Phil. That's why I am saying to your listeners tonight, you know, please, 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 whatever you do, don't continue to swallow this propaganda that you're being fed by the right. This revolution in Egypt is a good revolution. It's full of good people. And here comes this woman
with a big boob.
With her big boobs.
With her big boobs. She doesn't look like it to me, I'll tell you that. 877-876-PHIL, the Bobby and Steve Dooley on the line with us. Laura Logan, you may not have heard, is a CBS reporter who was somehow sexually, well, that's what she's saying, sexually fondled or attacked. And Bobby Dooley on the line here with her husband saying that she's saying that to make the revolution in Egypt look bad. They've been looking for ways to make it look bad. They've been looking for ways to make it look like a Muslim Brotherhood thing, or they've been trying to find it, find ways to make it look like a, you know, Islamist revolution. Anything they can do to discredit it. And that's what she believes is happening here with this woman, Logan, from CBS News, Laura Logan, claiming a sexual assault and having been fondled and so forth. She left Cairo and went to the States, where she is now in an American hospital. What do you guys think? Is this a is this legit? And you probably have not heard the story, but do you believe the media has been attempting to make this revolution look like just a mob scene? 877-876-7445 here on the Phil Henry Show. Our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Pick up the Phil Henry Show backstage pass and get yourself a BSP to listen to all the archives and our live streaming video of the show.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil. Bobby and Steve Dooley on the line here. Laura Logan is a reporter in Egypt. She was in Egypt. She's back in the United States, who was, quote, sexually assaulted, which you don't buy, Bobby. She claims that she was sexually assaulted and beaten. You're not believing any of it.
No, I don't believe it.
And you said during our break you think it's basically because the woman is a conservative. She's against the protests. And so she's made this claim to discredit Obama.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, don't you think there are claims that can be made to discredit Barack Obama that are a lot easier to prove?
This is the easiest thing in the world. So there is nothing more explosive than saying, I was sexually assaulted. I was sexually humiliated. I was manhandled by a group of Egyptians. And you know what kind of an image that brings up in the minds of Americans. I don't think there's anything more potent than that. And I think what she does, and if you look at her, she's a blonde, pretty, American reporter. The epitome, I think, of what we like to see in ourselves. And she's making this claim that she went over there to cover this protest, and this is what the protest is all about. Egyptians trying to put their hands on her. She's a conservative. So she's against the protests. And she's looking to make Obama look bad.
You know, it's a very interesting thing that we can make these claims without any real support, any proof.
Well, you know, in this world, everybody's looking for proof. It's interesting that we can't just see what's right in front of us. You know,
well, what's right in front of us is the lady claimed that she was sexually beaten and she was sexually assaulted and she was sexually this and that. That's what's right in front of us.
That's right in front of us as her claim. But what's right in front of us is the truth.
That's Bobby's claim.
That is my claim. My claim is the truth. Her claim is what is her claim.
And well, her claim is that she was sexually assaulted. Okay.
That's right. And that is her lie. But the truth is what I'm telling you. And
the truth is what you're telling me, which is that she's lying.
The claim she's making is that she was sexually assaulted. The truth is what I am saying, and that is she's lying, and she's doing it to make Obama look bad and the Egyptian people look bad, and to make Egyptians look like what Americans think they are anyway. Swarthy, oily, dirty, dark-skinned.
Oh, so here we go with the racist claims. You know, Bobby...
No, I'm not necessarily saying racist. I'm saying swarthy and dark-skinned. That is different from racist.
Well, how is that different from racist? And you talk about this, you mentioned she's blonde and she's pretty and she's American and she's been grabbed by these swarthy, darker, that's what she's claiming. How is that not racist?
No, that is something that goes deeper than the word racism. Americans go foggy when they hear the word racism. But when you say swarthy and dark-skinned and oily and Arabic or Middle Eastern, now you're tapping into something that is very deep. You're tapping into something that is almost from the time we were children, and we read the books like Aladdin and Ali Baba, and now we are imagining the American girl who is being pawed by a swarthy, you know.
Yeah, a swarthy oily man.
A swarthy oily man.
A swarthy oily man who is is not worthy of our sympathies.
No, because he pawed the American woman. So I think Phil, she's done a bang up job. She, as a conservative, being against the protesters, being against the war, and making Obama look like a man on the wrong side of this issue. And I really think it's been very, very bad. And again, I exhort your listeners. I know she's pretty. I know you think that she is lovely. She is what's wrong with this country. And the Egyptian people are what's right with this country.
Well, the Egyptian people may be what's right with their country.
No, they're right for America, too. The Egyptian people are showing the American people what to do. The Egyptian people are... Really, they're showing the American people guts for the first time.
All right, Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley, I wish you the best of luck trying to sell this, but I doubt it. I doubt it. Especially when she gets out of the hospital, especially when we hear her side, especially when she has God knows videotape or whatever else. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Henry Show still to come. Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard with the NewsHour.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
Reporter Serene Branson seeks medical attention, may have suffered something called a transient ischemic attack. I don't know what that is. We're going to find out. While it is still unknown why Los Angeles reporter Serene Branson unexpectedly slurred her words on live television on Sunday night, she's reportedly feeling better and she's searching for answers, this poor kid. She works for Channel 2 in Los Angeles. Serene Branson, or Branson Serene, excuse me. Serene Branson, I beg your pardon. We have two different ways of spelling here. I guess this is on the actuality. Serene Branson. It is a now viral video, and I guess it's funny for some people, or maybe it's fascinating, it's interesting. Who knows why videos go viral, you know? Videos go viral because people heard they were good, and they give them a play, and they are either interested in them or they're not. Virals go video because people think they're funny. Virals go video because people think they're sick and pathetic. Virals go video for a lot of reasons. Or videos go viral, I should say, for a lot of reasons. The now viral video was difficult and upsetting to watch for many as Branson, a young and healthy-looking CBS Los Angeles reporter, delivered a live report from the red carpet of the Grammy Awards. Her speech suddenly became slurred and incomprehensible. She appeared worried and aware that something was wrong while she was on the air. We're going to hear this clip here in a moment. The local CBS affiliate reached out to viewers on Monday saying that Branson wants us to know she followed up with a visit to the doctor for some medical tests. She thanks everyone for their concern and their good wishes and hopes to be back on the air very soon. Let's listen to this young woman, Serene Branson. She's on Channel 2 Sunday night here in Los Angeles.
CBS 2's Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Serene.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight. Let's go to Terrace and let's have the pet.
Oh, that poor kid. God.
What is that?
What is what?
What language?
It's English, man. She was having a stroke.
Yeah, you know she had a stroke? No, I thought you were saying she spoke. Oh, I thought you were saying she spoke a language.
No, I didn't say. When did you hear me say that, man? I said, here it is.
CBS 2's Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Serene.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight.
Poor
let's go to Terrace
Tays
and let's have the pet.
Oh, my God, that poor kid.
What was she saying?
I don't know. I can't imagine that this child. I can't even imagine.
I think it's probably
F-U.
Right after she got off the air. No, here it is.
CBS 2's Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Serene.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight. Let's go to Terrace and let's have the pet. F-U.
Well, I'll tell you what. You know what? It sounds like this kid's speech. You know?
Yeah, like she knew what she wanted to say. It was just coming out wrong.
Yeah. In other words, the nerve endings or whatever were the signals that she was sending to her mouth were not getting translated right.
What does that mean?
It means, I don't know what it means, to be honest with you. That's what it sounds like. Because you can hear her mouthing, you know, I can imagine her sending the signal to the brain, I want to say the following words. And the brain goes, okay. And scrambles it somehow.
Yeah, I'll play it again, man, because you can hear. She thinks she's making sense.
I don't know if this child thinks she's making sense or not. I think she did sound. She looks confused. I see the look on her face, but listen.
CBS 2's Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Serene.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight. Let's go to Terrace and let's have the pet.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah, it sounded like she was trying to say words that, you know, messed up the words, you know.
Yeah, it does. It sounds as if there was a very specific thing she wanted to say. And she says, very, very, that word was good.
Yeah, see, she could say very, we had a very, very.
Yeah, she said we had a very, very, and then after that, there was no way that those words were going to come out the right way. Now, NBC's Today Show addressed the public concern for the Emmy-nominated reporter by speaking with two doctors about this viral video. They say that the attack being caught on camera may help doctors reach a diagnosis. This is what we call a class neurological event, said Dr. Keith Black, director of Neurological Institute at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center. She was obviously aware that she was having difficulty. According to both Black and NBC's chief medical editor, Dr. Nancy Schneiderman, there are two possible causes of the attack. Transient ischemic attack, TIA, also known as temporary stroke or mini seizure located in the language area. All the TIA means is that there are something transient that blocked off the blood supply that altered the brain. When that happens, even for 5 seconds, brain cells can die, and it can mean further, and it can mean further on in one's life, you're set up. It's important while people watch this to remember that this is a classic sign of a neurologic event. Other things meaning something having to do with the nervous system.
Yeah, but he said there was a stroke, too.
Well, he said that something blocked blood supply to the brain for even a few seconds. And and when that happened, it became neurologic. In other words, when the blood supply was blocked to the brain could not neurologically function. Other things that can happen, right-sided weakness, slurred speech, the inability to communicate like she's having, problem walking, problem, profound headache. After the incident, the station released a statement saying that Branson was examined by paramedics and driven home by a colleague after it was determined that her vitals were fine. Schneiderman criticizes the action, saying she should have gone straight to the ER. I agree with that.
Yeah, but she's a doctor, though.
Yeah, I know, and I agree with her.
Yeah, but I mean, we're going to take her word for it.
I know, I'm just saying I agree.
Yeah, but why would we listen to you?
You don't have to listen to me.
Okay. A lot of people, when they're in the media, they think they have all the answers and everything.
Hey, bud, nobody's asking anybody to listen to Phil Henry. I'm just saying let me put it to you this way. That sounds like a really good idea.
See, that's better.
I don't know what's better about it.
Well, you and I agree with her. Hello, I'm Dr. Kildare.
Oh, don't be a smartass.
Uh-huh.
I'm just saying that what the doctor says there, that makes sense to me. She was driven home. Dr. Schneiderman over at NBC probably criticized it because she's on NBC and this girl works for CBS.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, I am kidding. Anyway, she said she should have gone to the ER. I would think so, too. I would think I'd want to be. If I were her, I'd want to go to the ER and get a full CAT scan, you know?
What's that?
It's like you ever had a CAT scan?
Well, yeah, I probably did on account of my head, but I don't know what it is.
You probably did on account of your head, but you don't know what it is. Well, you must know what it is because you said on account of your head.
Yeah, how do you know it's about your head?
Well, because I heard people get a CAT scan on their head.
It's an X-ray.
You ever had one?
I had a CAT scan once, yeah. Yeah, I did.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, it's no biggie. I had a CAT scan because it was back in the 80s, and I was tired, and they thought that maybe I was, I had some fatigue problem, but they wanted to rule stuff out, so they gave me a CAT scan. And it's one of the weirdest things in the world, man, to walk past the glassed-in area where the technicians are, you know?
Like, what do you mean?
The people that are reading it, or that are reading the actual CAT scan coming in, recording it, I should say.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird to turn around and look back and see your own brain.
Oh, wow. Did you see your brain and stuff?
I did. I looked, and there it is. There's Phil's brain. And there were large, dark areas. No, I'm just kidding.
What do they do?
Well, they just inject you with what they call dye. You don't feel it at all. And they lay you down, and they go, you know, that thing goes over your head. And
yeah, it looks like there's a laser ray that they're doing on your face.
Well, I don't know about that, man, but it's like a...
Yeah, but that thing goes over your face.
Yeah, there's a light and all that jazz. It's X-ray in your head. And, and they check it out, man. But I thought it was weird because I was looking at my own. I was looking at Henry's brain. All right, anyway, Dr. Schneiderman says she should have recovered and had perfectly normal neurologic function, normal vital signs, and said, fine, I'll go home on my own. Not the right thing to do, she says. You immediately go to the emergency room because this can be a harbinger of more things to come. It's not unlike a heart attack. You wouldn't send a heart attack patient home. She does acknowledge that she's not examined her and obviously can't make an official diagnosis, but Schneiderman did say, I'm hired by the network to make these spot analyses and to pretend like I can actually do this from a television set and a studio miles and miles away, so you have no right to ask me those questions. But she did insist that the video most definitely shows a neurologic event in real time. What does that mean, in real time?
It's not taped.
Yeah, it's not tape recorded. A neurologic event that you're not looking at on tape replay. What the hell? So that's a trip, man. That is a trip. Let's listen to that again, okay?
Yeah, I don't know why. Why is it I could listen to that for a long time?
Well, it's probably because it's fascinating to hear. How often do we hear a stroke happening, you know? And when they say, you know, that there is a... what you're hearing is like the nerves are literally receiving the message, but they can't send it right. It's almost like a guy who is it's almost like the telegraph operator at the telegraph office. You tell him what the message is, and his hand's broken, and it's just, you know.
It's all messed up.
It's all jacked up. So that's kind of what her brain said. Okay, mouth, say this. And the mouth went, B-da-doo-doo-bay. You know, it just couldn't.
I didn't do that.
What do you think? Yeah, I know it didn't do that. It did something different. Do you understand what I'm saying?
No, you don't just want to do.
Please shut up, man. The point I'm trying to make is the mouth didn't do what the brain told it to.
I know what that's about.
Yeah, me too.
You know, you guys are... Here then is Serene Branson.
CBS 2's Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center with highlights and backstage coverage we're seeing for the very first time. Serene.
Well, a very, very heavy divertation tonight. We had a very Darrison fight. Let's go to Terrace and to the pit.
Oh, that poor kid. Was she trying to say there's very, very heavy rain?
Yeah, probably that.
All right, who's more understandable, her or this
kid? Anybody want to see y'all Jesus kill?
All right, there you go. See, so that was her later on. I'm sorry, I'm kidding around. That was her when she got home. How come you ain't laughing?
I don't think it's funny, man.
Oh, get out of here. So Serene Branson was fine when she got home and she saw that her dog had crapped on the rug.
Anybody want to see young Jesus kill George Bush?
All right. Okay, so in other news here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, we do have our news hour coming up. I want to also remind you, because we've been remiss in mentioning our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. You can get live streaming video and audio of the show. You can listen to live streaming audio on the video, I should say. And you can also get our archives. You can get our news feed, and you can get it all, man. And we also have our merchandise stores open with our best-of CDs and our shot glasses. Now, our on-demand, if you missed a video in recent days, you can go over to the on-demand on the right side of the page, and our Saturday Night KFI on-demand video cast is there as well, in case you missed that. In other news, Obama and the GOP are steering onto a budget collision course. I don't know who's right, I don't know who's wrong. I know that there's people, you know, that want to believe this and that and something else. But I'm telling you right now, man, sometimes it doesn't seem like there's very bright people in charge. It doesn't seem like there's very bright people in charge at all. I mean, we've got two completely opposite views on how to cure the economy. And not only are there two opposite views, but they are two very entrenched views. And on top of everything else, the two sides are mocking of each other, barely conversant with each other. I mean, we've got a situation, folks, in this country when it comes to just the future of this country that is not unlike some of the darkest days in the history of this nation, up to and including the days prior to the Civil War. Now, I'm not trying to scare you. I don't think that, frankly, I don't think that's what anybody has in mind. But, you know, you hear little burblings of that. You know, when you hear this guy Perry down and tell, oh, and secede from the Union, all this bull crap. There is very definitely a feeling, I think, in this country of two entrenched points. And what do you think he's going to do? He's slamming the Obama budget proposal yesterday afternoon.
We know we have a fiscal crisis in this country. We know we have a debt crisis in this country. And everybody, whether you're right or left, knows the sooner you tackle these problems in America, the better off everybody is. Our problem is we are running out of road to keep kicking this can down. And so what did we just get today? We got a punt. The president punted on the budget, and he punted on the deficit and on the debt.
All right, we'll hear more of that when we come back. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. From the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
What we see happening in Iran today.
President Obama has failed to lead in the face.
Well, there are some days I try to figure it out because
CBS
I'm always.
Serene Branson is live at the Staples Center.
It sounds racist to me.
Yeah, but
Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. Don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com. Dogs at the Westminster Kennel Club. You ever watch this thing?
Yeah, I've seen it sometime.
This is every year, man. They have this dog show. And they have two, let's see, where can you find nearly 2,000 dogs and a lot more doggy crap in one building this week? Well, it's at Madison Square Garden, the Westminster Dog, the Kennel Club show.
Yeah, that's the one where they run around with them.
Yeah, they run around with them, man. And they have them, you know, they look at their teeth and all that. I've never, I like dogs just as much as the next guy. I've never really got the whole dog show thing. I couldn't tell you what they're looking for.
Well, I think they're looking for, like, what's a dog good for, you know?
Well, what's a poodle good for?
What is a poodle good for?
A poodle, like, I think that's a hunting dog.
A hunting dog? Are you kidding me? What, the poodle going to hunt what? He's going to hunt, like, somebody's mink coat or something? Where's my mink coat, Snookums? And that dog's all, you know, I can't feature that.
I don't know what kind of, a lot of dogs are raised for specific, they were raised for specific reasons, and then human beings, what do you think of that dog whisperer?
I like the dog whisperer.
I don't think he knows what he's talking about.
You know, we talked about the dog whisperer one time on a show, and people were really resentful of him.
Yeah, I remember that.
You know, they were all, boy, don't tell me how to run my dog. Isn't that funny?
Yeah, a lot of people think they know about dogs, but they don't.
Oh, I think most people don't know their ass from a hole in the ground about a dog or how to take care of animals. Nothing. Nothing. And, you know, I walk and run here at the El Pacifico, and I will go down into the beach area, you know, where the houses are, and I will run down along the jetty, and I come back. You guys know where I go, right?
Yeah.
And I see tons of dogs, and I see tons of people with their dogs. And 90% of them, well, not 90, I'd say a good 50% of them have got the jaws on the dog, you know, tied shut with a leash, or they got one of those little cages.
Yeah, in case they bite.
Yeah. Now, what is that about? What's that about?
Well, I mean, some dog's going to bite if you reach down and touch them.
No, a dog's going to bite if you walk past a damn thing. Now, I believe, and I've always had this philosophy, and I don't care what anybody thinks, dogs don't bite human beings. When a dog bites a human being, you should kick the thing until it's dead.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not kidding you. I'm being literal.
Yeah, man, you're going to get a real pissed off owner.
Whoa, now I know that. There's some people that value the lives of dogs before they value the lives of human beings. And they tell you that because that's how sick they are. That's how I think humans that treat animals better than other humans. I think people that value dogs or cats or animals above humans, I think they are mentally disturbed. Okay? Like that bitch with that chimp in Connecticut.
Yeah, well, she was crazy. Everybody knows she was crazy. You know.
Well, you say everybody knows she's crazy. She's not much different than a lot of people with their dogs. Just so happens a chimp is deadly, man. A dog is going to bite you. You know. Did I ever tell the story of that guy I know at the beach, Mark, what he did with that pit bull?
Yeah, you said he swung it around and he threw it against the wall.
He did. This pit bull went after somebody's dog. He grabbed the hind legs of this pit bull, and he swung it around like you would swing around a child. When you know how you kind of turn around, swing around with a little girl or a little boy, you're holding onto their hands?
Yeah.
Only he had the pit bull like that by the hind legs. And he swung around like you're like the hammer throw in the Olympics and threw this damn thing against the wall of a house.
Oh, man. What happened?
That dog was like, what the hell happened to me? That dog was, you know, and some people may think I'm being cruel. But let me tell you, this animal, this dog was about to tear ass after a woman and a small dog. In fact, it was going after the little dog. It was a pit bull off the leash, had gotten out of somebody's yard, and that's life, you know? I love animals, man. I've been known to drive around the neighborhood with dogs and cats in my car looking for their owners when they're abandoned or whether they're walking down the street. I've been known to do all that kind of stuff. I took a cat to the animal hospital one day. It wasn't even my cat. I just found a cat laying behind my house, sick, I mean, deathly sick. And I just found this animal, picked it up, and took it down to the animal hospital. So I love cats and dogs. I love all kinds of animals. But they are not of greater value than a human being. It's never going to happen in my world. And when I see somebody with a dog or any other kind of animal that's dangerous, and they're out in public with the damn thing, and I really resent these stupid bastards with their pit bulls standing around like they're some kind of badass with their dog. You know what, man? All I got to do is come back with a baseball bat. That's the end of your dog. Oh, well, I guess he's going to get pissed, you know.
Yeah, that's what those guys will do.
Well, let him get pissed then. Dogs do not bite human beings. I don't give a damn. Unless it is in defending the life of the human being. It's a life and death situation. I understand that. I understand a guard dog doing that. You don't bite a human being simply for walking by. You don't bite a human being for reaching down and petting. If your animal reacts like that, take your dog and stick it back in the yard and teach it some manners before you walk it out in the street where human beings live. And I mean, the mental disease of some people with their pets, to the point where human beings are getting mutilated,
killed, crippled? You got to be kidding me.
You ever seen that show on TV called Fatal Attraction?
There's a movie.
No. He's talking about the TV show on Animal Planet?
Yeah.
I've seen it advertised.
That show, man, is scary. Because that show, people and their animals, and then what happened, you know?
What like when they get too close to them?
Yeah. They had one lady had a crocodile, man. She got, like, bit her hand off. They had that chimp lady story. They had another story about a guy that had a cat.
You mean like a tiger?
Yeah, like a tiger.
What'd it do?
Oh, it killed him. It killed him, man. With one swipe of his paw, killed the guy. And that guy knew that tiger ever since it was a kitten.
A kitten? What do they call tigers?
Like a kitten.
A kitten? No, they don't. They call them cubs, don't they?
Yeah, I think they call them cubs.
Sure, I believe it. There are domesticated animals, there are wild animals, there are wild animals that are tamed. So there's three basic kinds of animals. Domesticated means that they have been a part, basically, of the human family for thousands of years. They have been domesticated. They are, scientists now tell us that dogs and cats recognize the human form from birth. So when a cat looks up and it's born, or a dog looks up and it's born, or other domesticated animals, I forget which ones are chickens, I think, are domesticated, others, but they know this about dogs and cats. When they look up at a human, from birth, they recognize the human form. So that's how familiar they are with us. It's in their DNA, it's in their genes. Wild animals are wild animals. And they may look cute, and they may look furry, and they may look like the greatest things in sliced bread. But like raccoons, you know?
Yeah, like the raccoon you're telling me you're going to feed.
I'm not feeding any raccoons. I had raccoons at my house one time, and they were very rude, and they left without saying thank you. No, I'm kidding.
What?
No, I'm kidding. There were raccoons out in my backyard, and they were up on their little hind legs all begging, because people feed these guys, you know?
What'd you do?
I told him to get the hell out, man. I said, get out. I said, clear out now. I want to see you guys break camp by sunup. No, I went, boo, and, you know, they ran.
Is that the one that fell in your pool?
Yeah, there was one that fell in my pool. There were three raccoons, and I just opened the door, and I went, get out of here, you know, like that. And two of them went right and left. The other one went straight back into my pool. I heard this, right? Then I kept looking into the dark, and I saw these two little eyes suddenly light up staring at me like, you scared me.
That's funny as hell, man. The one that went in the pool?
I guess it's the one that went in the pool, yeah. So we had tons of raccoons, man. Where I used to live, we had raccoons, we had rabbits, we had snakes, we had coyote. We had the damn coyote were everywhere. I mean, everywhere. And, in fact, I befriended a cat from the neighborhood. It was an outdoor cat. It wasn't an indoor cat. I said, well, it's an outdoor cat. But I used to feed him, and Catherine fed him, and she was destroyed because one night I knew it happened. I heard just like that, and I look out, and there's this big-ass coyote eating out of the cat's dish. So,
uh-oh.
Yep. He got a hold of the cat, man. Must have been a nice snack. And I just, and that, of course, coyotes are the same way. All you got to do is go boo. And they, man, they are, you don't even see, it's like Coyote and the Roadrunner in the cartoon. All you see is that little puff of dust, you know, and they're gone. So there's wild, and then there's wild tame animals. And those are like the pandas and the, yeah, all these creatures. And they're dangerous too, man. And all we have to say is Siegfried and Roy. And what do you think of?
Two gay guys.
Not two gay guys. I'm talking about what happened to that one guy.
Oh, yeah. He got bit.
Got bit is right. And the tiger didn't even mean anything by it. The tiger was trying to, I don't know, what was he doing, saving him?
Yeah, he's trying to get him back to his cage on account he thought that lady was going to hurt him.
See, that's nuts, man. So people and animals, I mean, we don't know a thing about them. We treat them ridiculously. We sleep with them. We make love to them. Jesus, some of these people with their pets makes me sick. I want to throw up. Honest to God, that woman with that chimp, they should have shot her, too. I'm sorry to say that.
Oh, watch it, man. Come on.
I'm telling you, it pissed me off so much. The cops should have gone back and shot her. Not literally, but I mean, that was how I felt at the time.
Yeah, she was like kissing it and everything.
Kissing it? I mean, she was nuts. They would have been doing the human race a favor, man, if they would have plugged that stupid chimp and then her, too. Oh, yeah. They, you know, no. I don't play that at all. So dogs, cats, any of them that are not friendly to the human race, they have no value, no worth, no, unless they're a guard dog.
What about a guard cat?
What do you mean a guard cat?
Well, couldn't it make a cat whisper?
Yeah, a cat whisper? You saw what happened to Dean Wheeler when he tried to be one of those. He got his face clawed, man. No way, no way. All right, coming back here on a world-famous Phil Henry show, Japan has suspended a whale hunt after they got chased by protesters. And the Atlanta Thrashers, that'll be hockey team number two, Atlanta, that you're losing, as the Thrashers are thinking of going to Canada. Some sports talk coming up here on the world-famous Phil Henry show.
Phil Henry. Listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. And just a comment, Iran, as you know, or may not know, Iran, well, you do know that Iran has, from June of 2009, the people of Iran, a segment of the population of Iran, a significant segment, the electorate, a youthful electorate, and a progressive, and when I say progressive, I don't mean that in the political sense so much as I mean that in the sense of you know, history and society and governance. These folks are not happy with the Islamic State. There have now been recent clashes with the authorities in Iran as recently as this week, and watch as the progressives in this country, and by that I do mean political, the liberals in this country, watch as they all of a sudden disappear. Just disappear, man.
Yeah, they don't like that.
I don't know why it is, but you bring up Iran, and all of a sudden, these big fat mouths have been flapping about Egypt for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. All of a sudden, they're gone. Now, what's that about? And now we got, guess what else we got? Libya. Now the crap's hitting the fan in Libya. That's right. As recently as today, Libyan authorities now are busting out the tear gas and the this and the that, you know, in Libya. Remember we said last week about Syria?
You said they wouldn't do it in Syria because of the police state.
That's right. But the country of Syria and the Syrian political situation has been very much in the news because people are, in a way, wondering what's going to happen in that country. Now, Syria, in my opinion, and this is just my uninformed opinion, but I don't think Syria is going to stand for, in the words of the James Brown song, Papa don't stand no mess, you know.
Yeah, well, they got blowtorch toilets and stuff.
What?
They got toilets that are blowtorches.
Toilets that are blowtorches? What are you talking about?
Well, yeah, man. He's talking about the Shah of Iran had that.
The Shah had the Savak when they sat down on the toilet? Oh, yeah, that's... Do you imagine? What is the mind that came up with that?
Yeah, but Syria's got that, too.
How do you know? I don't want to talk about that. I don't even want to talk about that. You imagine what kind of a sadistic bastard came up with that? And don't you say CIA or I'll...
Well, I don't know, man. Maybe the British did.
More likely the British. More likely the Syrians. More likely the Russians. So, for the purposes of this discussion, and today I saw on Tweetster, our favorite cartoon-looking guy, Roger Ebert.
Yeah.
And he says the following thing, did it really take trillions of dollars and that many lives to do what Egypt did peacefully? That was his question. And, of course, he's referring to Iraq, and he's referring to Afghanistan. And what's really sad and completely dishonest is for a guy like Ebert, first of all, I'm not saying he shouldn't have his opinion, but for a guy like Ebert, who is a liberal, to refuse any linkage between what happened in Iraq by way of U.S. military force and events in Iran, Tunisia, Egypt, and elsewhere, to refuse to accept that what happened, and there are a great many journalists, many of them Arabic journalists, who have said the following in so many words. What America did was stir the pot in the Middle East. It was something that that was needed and had been needed for a long time. And I agree with that, and I adhere to that philosophy. What we did in Iraq by going in and with a mighty military force and taking out an entire regime, we did stir the pot in the Middle East and create in the minds of the people of the Middle East at least the idea that it was possible to free oneself from these despots who've been there for decades. Now we got Gaddafi. 41 years that guy has been in power. 41 years. You think Mubarak was there? 41 years, this guy Gaddafi. Sure, I know the United States is in bed with a guy. I mean, we talked him out of his terrorist ways, supposedly. And he gave up his his aspirations for this and that and something else. And he's no longer a terrorist. And that's wonderful. But guess what? You know, you're still a dictator. And so it may not be enough to say he's no longer a terrorist. The people of Libya may have something to say about that, and that's kind of the way that thing goes. And I would say, folks, especially conservatives, before you want to distance yourself from some of these things that are happening, understand that it was, in my opinion, and I think I'm right, George Bush, who was the man that introduced into the game, if you will, in the Middle East, the idea that these guys are not so entrenched that they can't be, that you can't cut the head off of these regimes. And I don't think it is, coincidental at all that all of a sudden we have Iran after so many years we're told, oh yeah, I mean, that's the Islamic Republic. You don't mess with that. And this is the way, and they're tribal people, and they're this, and they're that, and there's some other bullcrap. Oh, really? Well, guess what? And then here comes Egypt, here comes Tunisia, here comes Libya, here comes Yemen, here comes, here comes Papa. So I am going to be interested to watch the progressives and watch them squirm over Iran. I'm going to be interested, and I'll watch them squirm as they continue to deny linkage between Iraq and what's happening in the rest of the Middle East. As they continue to deny any linkage, as they continue to come up, as they will, with every phony excuse, every lie, everything they can think of to discredit what we did in Iraq and what is happening in the rest of the region. You can't deny the connection. You can try, but the more you do, the dumber you look. And people, you know, especially about as dumb as those people who said democracy is foreign to a tribal people. That's almost racist, if you think about it. And in fact, it is, if you think about it. It is racist. It's basically saying a bunch of guys that lived as nomads on the sand on the backs of camels, what do they know about countries and national assemblies? All they know is how to find the next watering hole and do that whole Anthony Quinn, impression.
What are you talking about, Anthony Quinn? He's a Mexican.
Yes, he is a Mexican, but he played an Arab.
Oh.
Guys, you don't know anything, do you? 877-876-7445. Here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, kicking things off this week. And our website, philhenryshow.com. That's philhenryshow.com. Canada is calling as the Thrashers look for support in Atlanta, and they ain't getting it, man. I think it's about time. I kind of have gotten a renewed interest in hockey, and I don't know why. I think it's because it's a physical sport. It's a violent sport. There's no more football. I can't stand basketball. Ain't much on baseball. And what the hell, man? I think I'm into hockey now.
Really?
Yeah. I go through YouTube looking for all those fight videos. We'll be back. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Famous Phil Henry Show.
You know, these Iranians, not to get too crazy.
Man, you know, they're never going to go to war.
I don't care, man. All I'm telling you is if Iran keeps doing what they're doing, which is basically telling everybody to shove it sideways, so what's the end game there, man? What are you supposed to do?
Well, we're not. What are you talking about? Like, we're going to attack and everything?
Well, what are you supposed to do? I mean, tell me, somebody, you know, I'm listening to all these guys criticizing. What are you supposed to do? If these guys in Iran are doing whatever they're not supposed to be doing, look, I don't care. I mean, I didn't make the rules, but the rules are the rules, the laws are the law. And if the guy says, which it does say, the UN says, you can't have nuclear weapons, you can have nuclear energy so as to enrich your... And don't give me this crap about Israel, because they didn't sign that damn thing, which is the non-proliferation treaty, or whatever, however you pronounce it. But the point is, aren't you supposed to invade?
Yeah, man, but you can't... You're going to have Obama invade?
Obama would never invade. Obama doesn't have the political will to invade Iran, even though it would be completely justified if Iran continues to say, stick it sideways, no, we won't let you inspect, and your sanctions are pointless. They're doing exactly what freaking Saddam did. So if they don't want to do anything with Saddam, if that was a bad thing to do, and they should have had more inspections, and they should have done this, and they should have done that, all right, what do you do when all that stuff runs out? You know?
You're going to belch.
Yeah, I was going to belch. You don't have to point it out, man. All right, so I just thought I'd bring that up because that's the little entree into Canada. Wants the Thrashers to move there.
How do you get into hockey, man?
I'm into hockey now. I'm into hockey big time. I love it, and that's where it's at. There's no more football. I can't watch basketball. The playoffs are fine. If the Lakers are in, that's good. Other than that, I don't care. I don't care. And baseball, get out of here with that. Football and now hockey. So I'm watching a little bit of it. And to sort of whet my appetite, I went to YouTube and I looked up some of the great fights.
Very good fights.
Well, there was one good fight. One of the best I saw was 1979, New York Rangers and Boston Bruins. And the Bruins won the game. And then a fan at Madison Square Garden grabbed a stick from one of the Bruins, and all of the Bruin players went up into the stands.
What, they're going up there what?
To start beating, kicking ass.
You're kidding.
No. And one of the Bruins, Terry O'Reilly, he went up, man, he starts wailing, another guy goes up. Every guy on the Bruin team was in the stands at Madison Square Garden. That's fantastic. And then remember the other day we were talking about Dave Tiger Williams?
Yeah.
Look up Dave Tiger Williams on YouTube and look up his fights. Every one of his fights, it looks like he lost, too. I mean, if you look at his face, you can tell he lost all his fights. But still, all these fights. And there was one he had with this guy, Terry O'Reilly. Then the fight of fights. This is an amazing fight. And for those of you, again, who are not hockey fans, hockey is its own little world, and it has its own little fiefdom, and all of the little disputes and the fights and the bad blood that goes on in hockey, it runs deep and it runs long. Teams hate each other for decades. Players hate each other for years and years and years, and they fight it out, and they spill blood. And so what happened was, in 1996, there was a Detroit Red Wing player, Chris Draper, who was injured very, very badly by this big lummox of a guy named Claude Lemieux, who played for Colorado. The Colorado and Detroit has had a blood feud ever since. Now, the following year, in one of the regular season games, a brawl broke out between the Colorado Avalanche and the Detroit Red Wings. Away from the fight was Claude Lemieux, the guy that had injured this Red Wing terribly the year before. And a guy by the name of Colcox, this guy, just comes up, and I mean, he just knocked Claude Lemieux out. Blood all over the ice, blood all over his face. And thus continues this dispute. And then later in the season, these two guys are facing off, and they look at each other. You see them talking to each other. The game hasn't even started yet.
Oh, I saw that when you were showing that.
Yeah, the game hasn't even started, and they're looking at each other, talking, looking, stalking. And suddenly they drop the sticks, and they go at it. So a lot of people say, well, what is the point of that in hockey? It seems to be, and it is a part of the game. It is as legitimate a part of the offense and defense as any other play might be in football, baseball, basketball, hockey. It is a part of the game, fighting. You get penalties, but you don't get penalties. They're not the kind of penalties that would get you thrown from the game unless it's really egregious. Two guys squaring off and duking it out, generally, they don't break it up until you fall to the ice. If you're still on your feet, they don't go near you. The referees will not go near two players that are still fighting on their feet. The minute they go to the ice, then they break them up. The penalties that they get, maybe 4 minutes for roughing. You never hear them getting these penalties for fighting. You generally get them when he was roughing. Roughing? That guy that knocked out Claude Lemieux, he came up, and I mean a right hand, boom! I mean, he hit him so hard, he dropped to the ice like a bag of potatoes, and then turtled, what they call turtled.
What's that? That's what he gets, you know, like covers his head.
Yeah, he got into a little tee, covered his head up. And, of course, it was very humiliating to him. So that's why when they came out and they played the next time, Lemieux and this guy start duking it out. Now, do I like that? If it's part of the game, I do. You know, and there, to an extent, it is. But I think that's what people misunderstand about hockey. To a certain extent, it is very much a part of the game. You hire, not as much anymore as they used to, but you hire what they call goons or enforcers, guys that'll go around and dish out the pain if one of your star players is hurt or they act as bodyguards and so on. These days, these so-called goons and enforcers have got to be able to skate and score. So let's take a look at this story here. The Canadians scan the attendance figures for the NHL. They grab a hold of the numbers next to the Atlanta Thrashers and adopt a view of hockey in the Sun Belt. They envision Phillips Arena as a destination for tourists, not serious hockey folks. The Canadians are waiting for the tourists to become so irritated they abandon the Thrashers completely and become content with football. The Atlanta Thrashers are in the midst of a reboot with a new coach, a respected teacher and tactician, a new general manager who acquired five players from a Stanley Cup team, and a new star who signed a five-year deal. As the Thrashers try to earn their second playoff berth, the noise around whether the team is viable in Atlanta long-term grows. Busloads of Quebec City fans clamoring for a team travel 535 miles to Nassau Coliseum on Long Island to see the New York Islanders play. Thrasher President Don Waddell said a Quebec City newspaper sent reporters to inquire about the demise of hockey in Atlanta and whether the team might be relocated to Quebec City. So what all of that means is for the second time, Atlanta had a hockey team. And they're about to lose it.
What was the first one?
They had one called the Flames, the Atlanta Flames. And they left. And I never could figure out whether hockey was going to be a thing in the South or not. I think it's a minor league sport in the South, but it ain't a big league sport. Unless you're talking about Tampa Bay, you know.
Well, yeah, but Tampa Bay, man, you call that the South?
Yeah, I call Tampa the South, yeah. I mean, I may not call Miami the South. Tampa's the South. Don't worry about it. But here's the thing. When I was living in Atlanta, I went to hockey in Atlanta. They had minor league hockey at that time.
When was that?
That was like 1992. And I had a friend of mine. I was working at a radio station in Atlanta. And working at the station, he had tickets to see the Atlanta Knights. That was the name of the team. And they had billboards that said, come see the Atlanta Knights down here at the Omni, which is where the Hawks would play. I don't know what arena they got in Atlanta now, but they had the Omni, which was right next to the Georgia Dome. So I'd take the train down there, and we'd go in and we'd watch the Atlanta Knights play hockey. Well, the funniest thing, and I don't mean to be disrespectful, but I'm telling you, it was freaking rednecks everywhere, you know?
A lot of chicks with big hair and everything.
Oh, big hair? You wouldn't believe it, man. Big-ass hair piled up, you know, and all these redneck boyfriends are there, and they're loving it. I mean, they're loving it. They're pounding on the glass. They dig it. So, you know, I think it's a sport, regardless of whether they're playing it on ice or a bunch of Canadians are playing it. I don't know, but people like it because it's a physical game, because there's just good all-out, you know, just brawling goes on. And I don't know. Maybe I'm at a point in my life where I can really, really appreciate that stuff. All right, in other news here on the Phil Henry Show, losing your hair at 20. Oh, I better not say this one, bud.
What?
Well, you're losing your hair only because you ran your head through a tree. Losing your hair at 20 is linked to prostate cancer.
Well, who loses their hair at 20 other than Bud?
A guy that's going to have prostate cancer, I guess. I mean, I shouldn't make a joke out of it, but there's a French study, so you can qualify with that. I'm kidding. The French, they're very good doctors. A French study has found that men who start to lose their hair at the age of 20 are more likely to develop prostate cancer in later life. Oh, boy. The research compared 388 men being treated for prostate cancer with a control group of 281 healthy men and found that those with the disease were twice as likely as the healthy men to have started going bald when they were 20. Ah, baloney.
Well, you can't blow that off.
I don't know, man.
Why do you say baloney? I mean...
Because isn't it possible that you can find consistencies with a variety of things? Maybe not. However, if the men only started to lose their hair when they were 30 or 40, there was no difference in their risk of developing prostate cancer.
When did you start losing your hair?
I think I started losing my hair when I was 28. And I'll tell you why I knew that. I was my girlfriend at the time. I was just talking to her. And she said something to me. And I said, oh, yeah, like what? And she, I don't know what she was talking about, your hair. And I go, what do you mean my hair? And she pointed to the top of my head. She pointed to the top of her head, meaning the top of your head. I go, what are you talking about?
Well, how come you didn't know?
Well, think about it, man. When do you look at the top of your head with a mirror?
I wouldn't to look and see if I'm bald.
What do you mean you would to look and see if you're bald? Do you?
No.
Well, then how do you know?
If I was going bald, I would.
Yeah, but how would you know you're going bald?
Somebody tell me.
Well, that's what I did. Somebody told me and I started looking. So my girlfriend says to me right there, and so I go, really? So I went into the bathroom, took the mirror, looked, and God, I mean, to see your hair for the first time, to see that you have actually lost hair like that, where you can see your scalp, it's pretty like, whoa, scary, you know?
Were you really bald?
Not really, man, but you could see through scalp. And so that's when I went, oh, man, you know? So I was about 28 years old.
Well, what did you try and get hair plugs or something?
I thought about it, and I went through, and I've mentioned this on the air, I went through a six-month period of real ridiculousness, what I call the real jackball period when guys lose their hair. That's when you want to get hair plugs. That's when you think about getting, they have a thing called scalp reduction, man, where you, I don't know, you they make an incision and pull your scalp together, a bunch of stuff like that.
Ew.
And, geez, bud.
Yeah, what's that about?
That's ew.
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 Anyway.
What, do you think I sound gay?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah, as a matter of fact. So, you know, all kinds of stuff. And then and ridiculous things like shampoos that you see. Do you remember the Dick Van Dyke episode where he dreamed of going bald and he used some sort of an oil and vinegar concoction? He had a dream that he was growing he was growing cabbage on his head. Lettuce. Well, anyway, stupid things like that. I went through a 6-month period of that kind of idiocy, where I was ordering these different things, doing scalp massage, and then I also called a place about hair plugs. And then, at the end of, I'd say 6 to 8 months, I just went, you know, I don't care.
You just didn't care anymore.
I don't care. I didn't give a damn. You know?
You didn't say that you get more women when you was bald?
Well, I don't know if it's because I was bald. It just happened to coincide with the time in my life when I started losing my hair, and suddenly I had all these girlfriends. You know, and women, it doesn't hang them up. It really just doesn't. Maybe some chicks, I don't know, you know. But I bet there's something that hangs up everybody about everyone. So what are you going to do? But I never found it to be anything that was, I didn't like the way it looked, but what the hell are you going to do, you know?
You know, why don't you just shave your head, man? You wear your hair kind of long.
I've shaved my head. I've worn it short. I've worn it long. One thing I refuse to do is do the ponytail. The bald guy with a ponytail? No way.
Yeah, that's the most jackball thing that I'd ever seen.
I saw a guy on TV the other night, and this guy's some lawyer, and he's some famous lawyer, and he's got this braided ass, just this ass tail is what I call it, a braided little thin gray ponytail coming off of his bald ass head. And you just want to walk up to the guy and say, excuse me for just a moment, and take some shears and just cut it off and show it to him. See? See what I did? See your little braided thing?
Yeah, he probably sue you for damages.
Sue me for damages. Because I damaged his ponytail? It was unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, so that's why I think Iran should be invaded. All right.
Hey.
World famous Phil Henry Show here tonight, and don't forget philhenryshow.com, the news hour here with Bud Dickman and Robert Leonard.
Phil Henry. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Yeah, tell him about that story.
I forgot to tell that story. Yeah, this morning I got up very, very early for a gig that I had, a voiceover gig. And then I took Maria to the airport. Now, she is a member of our local Rotary. And I don't know a lot about Rotary. Honest to God, I don't. I've heard of it. Rotary International, Rotary Club. You guys, you've heard of the Rotary Club, right? You've heard of Kiwanis, that kind of thing? And I don't know anything about it. She's a big believer in it, and her father was in Rotary, and I think her brothers are. It's a organization of business people who are service-oriented. That's their thing. You know, they want to be service-oriented. So she needed to go to the airport this morning, so I'll give you a ride because I'm going to be up. And I took her, and she flew this afternoon, I think at 1 o'clock, to Tokyo and then on to... she's staying in Tokyo, I think, for a couple days, and then they're going on to New Delhi. And as part of a contingent of American Rotary Club members, they're going to sort of be in India as a support and sort of as a cheerleading for the members of Rotary in India who are attempting to inoculate all the children in India against polio. So it's a very laudable thing, and especially for the Rotary members in India and the American Rotary guys that are going over there to... cheer them on and get this done. They literally are going to be, I mean, I asked her, I said, well, so where are you? They're going to be like in the sticks, man.
They're going to be like in that movie Gandhi.
Yeah, like in that movie Gandhi. Seriously, man, they're going to be way out in the middle. And although she's going to be staying in the homes of, they call Rotarians, people who are in the Rotary Club. She's going to be staying in the homes of Rotary members in India. But then they go out during the day and literally knock on doors, man. Now, they're only going to inoculate children 5 years of age and under, right?
Yeah.
Do you know how they figure out how old a kid, whether a kid's five or not?
Uh-uh.
You ask the child to touch the ear on the other side of his head. Okay, so lift up your right arm. You don't have to do it, bud. I think you're five, right?
Yeah.
What are you? You too?
You did the same thing.
Well, yeah, but I'm just demonstrating it. Well, anyway, okay. I guess it's natural, isn't it?
Yeah. See, I can do it.
Well, good. Okay, I guess you're 5 years old, man. Wow, you know.
Well, I mean, when you say it, everybody's going to automatically do it.
Yeah, everybody in the audience right now, I know, is touching their ear with their arm. I know. So, but if a little kid can do that, they're five. So then they, seriously, because here's the thing. Some of the parents are so poor, and this is very backwoods and very rural. They don't even know the ages exactly of their children. So anyway, I took her to the airport, and... I'm coming out, and I get over to the lot at LAX. We're at the Bradley Terminal, which is the International Terminal. I go across to where my car I thought was parked. It's not there.
Yeah, you thought it was stolen.
Hold on. I could have sworn I parked it at this one spot. You know how you just, I know I was on level three, and I know that I had to nose the car into this cement pillar, and there was a car here and a car here, and I just knew it. And I looked, I said, where is my car? I don't know where my car is. I walked this level, and I almost burst into tears because I was sure my car had been stolen. And I also realized that in my car was my cell phone. That was a double whammy because on my cell phone is all kinds of stuff, man, that anybody that wanted to, I mean, hack me serious, all you need is my cell phone. So I walked back into the terminal, dragging myself. I got to report my car is stolen. And I walk with these two LA cops, and one looks like LAPD. The other guy's wearing this jumper. I don't know. It looks like an anti-terror cop thing, something. And I said, I think my car's been stolen. So I meet this guy named Jose Vermonte. He is a Los Angeles airport police officer. He said, Mr. Hendry, I've never seen a car that people have reported stolen here in this lot ever actually be stolen. I've always found it. You wait here. And I said, you're lying to me. He said, no, you watch, Mr. Hendry. And I'm telling you, an hour later, in came Jose Vermonte of the Los Angeles Airport Police Department, and he said, it's on the fourth level, second car over, you dumbass. No, he didn't say dumbass.
Yeah, he did.
No, he didn't. And I said, man, thank you. Thank you. Anyway, I said that I would give him a mention, not a shout-out, a mention, a great mention to Officer Jose Vermonte, Los Angeles Airport Police. Our show is produced by Jason Rance. Our technical director is Rick Johnson. And, of course, our associate producer is Dan Northcraft. And this is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And don't forget to visit our website, philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. Back at it tonight, man. Phil Hendry.